Hello and welcome to the Risk Map podcast, our look ahead at the coming 2 weeks in the global business landscape brought to you by Control Risks, the leading international risk consultancy. I'm Charles Hecker, dialing in from our office in London.
And I'm Michael Moran, reporting this week from Denver, Colorado, one of the battleground states in the upcoming U.S. presidential election. Welcome to the podcast.
In this edition, we turn to Brazil, where ahead of the opening of the Rio Olympics on the 5th of August, authorities have made arrests in an alleged terrorist plot to disrupt the Games. We look at a round of elections in South Africa that will test the ruling African National Congress, besieged by allegations of economic mismanagement, low growth, and corruption. But first, Mike, let's talk about NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, whose plans to place 4,000 new troops in Poland and the Baltics, and talk of a beefed-up naval presence in the Black Sea, is meeting resistance from some unexpected places. Mike, a lot of this appears to be a reaction by Washington to concerns expressed by the Baltic states and Poland in the wake of Russia's intervention in Ukraine in 2014. Mike, is there support for these moves across NATO?
Well, there's actually been some rather negative comments. The most prominent has come from the Republican Party's candidate, Donald Trump, in the upcoming U.S. elections. He has raised questions about whether the United States should automatically defend the Baltic states, for instance, and he specifically said the Baltic states, in the event of an attack. Well, that is a basic nature of the NATO treaty, is the defense of each other in the case of an attack. So it has created quite a concern. Now, Trump, of course, is not president. And as we've said again and again, we don't believe he'll become president. It looks like Hillary Clinton will, and she's not made comments like that. However, within NATO, the French, the Turks, and others have also questioned whether or not NATO is pushing too far. And the Poles and the Balts have been concerned for some time now that they're overextended, that they feel very much as though they can be picked off. And, you know, essentially, if you want to really make a case for history, put in the position of Czechoslovakia in the 1930s, where the West just simply wasn't going to go to war over a Central European state that was annexed by an aggressive power. The Balts are concerned about these things, and within the Balts, obviously, there are some very significant populations of ethnic Russians who are amenable to the idea of a closer tie with Moscow. So NATO has not been eager to station troops in these countries. The French, in particular, have said that this could be going too fast. They've raised some questions about whether NATO should now take a pause and not risk provoking Russia in any way. So between the Turks and the French and some others within NATO who are somewhat skeptical about this, there is not a sense that this is a unified thing. And of course, there's a big question hanging over all of this, as with free trade and many other things that have been kind of centrist issues since World War II, really. There's a populist strain of politics in the West right now where things like NATO, things like the World Trade Organization and other established institutions of the post-Cold War world are being questioned in the mainstream political debates in all countries. So would all people in all NATO countries back the idea of going to war over Latvia? It's a good question.
Mike, it's a question I suspect we'll be posing over and over again. Jens Stoltenberg, the head of NATO today, issued a statement saying that it was time for the alliance to come together while it comes under pressure from the Trump foreign policy machine. We'll see how this goes as it becomes an election year football.
Thanks, Chuck. Now let's turn to the Brazilian state of Rio de Janeiro, which has deployed around 85,000 police officers and soldiers in preparation for the Olympic Games that start on 5 August. On 21 July, with just about 2 weeks to go before the Games, Brazilian police announced the arrest of 10 people in a southern state in an alleged plot to mount a terrorist attack on the Games. Tomas Favaro is our lead Brazil analyst. Tomas, we already had a financial state of emergency declared, concerns that the Games would worsen an already teetering economic crisis. So what does this latest development suggest?
While the Brazilian government quickly dismissed the alleged terrorist group as absolutely amateur, the arrests do indicate a heightened risk of a terrorist attack either at the country or against the country as a result of the Olympic Games. For that reason, we are raising our terrorist rating for Brazil from low to medium to reflect a recent trends in the global level suggesting that these terrorist groups are actively targeting Western countries to stage these spectacular attacks. be the question marks regarding Brazil's counter-terrorist capabilities, particularly in the light of the ongoing fiscal austerity plan being implemented and how that may affect law enforcement. And last but not least, that change also reflects the inherent threat profile of the Olympic Games, which, as we know, is historically rather different from other sporting events such as the World Cup. The Olympics do have a track record of attacks from a wide range of motivating factors, not only religious, but also geopolitical and even some of domestic nature.
So, Tomas, the Olympics obviously has also been an enormous fixture in the world sporting calendar. It's traditionally a popular place for people to travel to, maybe a once-in-a-lifetime trip, or even a corporation to bring large numbers of employees or clients. How does this affect the security situation on the ground for big companies and other travelers who are going to the games?
Yes, so Rio de Janeiro City has reported a significant decline in homicide rates over the past 15 years, and they're currently at a historically low. The problem, however, is that the historic low for Rio de Janeiro is still high for most Western standards. You know, it's high even for Latin American standards. Brazil has obviously planned an extensive security detail during the Olympics, including heightened surveillance and support from other branches of law enforcement. And while we do expect that to prevent a surge in crime during the event, unfortunately, we do not expect the police nor the other bodies within law enforcement in Brazil to be able to significantly curb common and violent crime during the event. As a result, we do expect businesses and personnel to have to contend with a series of security risks during their travels to Rio de Janeiro during the Olympic event.
Thanks, Tomas.
Thank you, Mike.
On Wednesday, the 3rd of August, South Africa holds municipal elections. Normally, municipal elections aren't the sort of thing that attract an awful lot of attention unless they're in some of the world's megacities. But the elections coming up in South Africa have a lot to say about the way the country is going to be governed in the future. I'm joined today in London by two of our Southern Africa analysts, Seamus Duggan and Barney Fletcher. Barney and Seamus, why are these municipal elections so important?
Thanks, Chuck. I think, first of all, they're important because the ANC has been under an enormous amount of scrutiny in recent months, and particularly its president, Jacob Zuma. This followed on the back of a series of really public corruption scandals. In December, the president removed a widely respected finance minister and replaced him with a man who was perceived as essentially a yes man, who had little experience and was a backbencher in the party. Shortly after this, the Constitutional Court, South Africa's highest court, ruled against Jacob Zuma and argued that he had failed to uphold his oath of office in relation to a corruption scandal regarding his homestead. And then most recently, there's been a ruling against him in what's become known as the Spy Tapes ruling, which is a corruption scandal that dates back to 2007. And essentially, each of these scandals has eroded support for both Zuma and the ANC. And what we've seen as this has progressed is an increase in factionalism within the African National Congress. The elections are particularly interesting because for the first time, we're really going to see the ANC being tested.
I think the corruption scandal Seamus mentioned, combined with the economic challenges that South Africa is currently facing, really gives a picture of a ruling party in crisis. And how the African National Congress resolves these difficulties will have significant implications for South Africa's political future.
Barney, since we're in the forecasting business, what do you think the results of these municipal elections will be, and what do you think the national impact will be?
So, in recent elections, we've seen a fairly consistent trend. The ANC has maintained support in many of the poor rural areas, but in urban areas, it's seen support decrease and opposition parties increasingly make inroads. And this trend is likely to continue in the upcoming municipal elections. The ANC is at particular risk in some very key areas. So areas such as Johannesburg, which is the economic hub of South Africa, areas such as Pretoria, the political capital, and some other cities such as Port Elizabeth. The ANC's majority in these areas is already fairly slim, and we actually expect it to lose its majority in these key urban areas. The longer-term impact of this is that a poor ANC election result will decrease the ability of Zuma and many of his allies to influence the selection of his successor in the 2017 party conference.
just to add what Bonnie has just said regarding the key metro areas, the ANC has already lost Cape Town, which is the home of Parliament. And I think we should stress the symbolic importance of losing each of these metros. As Barney mentioned, Johannesburg is the commercial hub. Pretoria, or Tshwane, is the seat of the executive. It's where Jacob Zuma's office is. And finally, Port Elizabeth, or Nelson Mandela Municipality, carries the name of the ANC's most famous son and is situated in Eastern Cape province of South Africa, which is essentially the spiritual heartland of the ANC. And it is a party that has historically relied on the use of history and symbols to preserve its dominance.
You've mentioned the impact that this might have on the commercial hub of Johannesburg. So what is the broader takeaway from all of this, or the broader implications for the business environment?
In the short term, municipal councils in South Africa still retain a large degree of authority. They are able to disrupt projects, and we've seen several large-scale infrastructure projects delayed because of disputes with municipal councils over things like water provision, land provision, etc. If you have more divided municipal councils, this could really impact governance and cause bureaucratic delays and more disputes when dealing with municipal governments. In the longer term, the ANC, as has been expressed, is a party going through a lot of challenges. And while it is simplistic to blame just one man, there is no doubt that the failure of President Jacob Zuma to really impose a coherent and unified policy direction on the party has caused a lot of legislative and regulatory uncertainty.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what Bonnie says. I think overall, despite the short-term challenges facing the ANC, despite a lot of uncertainty around Zuma, over the next five-year outlook at least, we expect general policy stability. And this is going to come from two principal sources. First of all, the current finance minister, Pravin Gordhan, looks increasingly stable and increasingly entrenched in his position. And he is widely respected throughout and across the political spectrum, as well as by the markets. And we expect Cyril Ramaphosa to ascend to the presidency, first of the ANC in 2017, and then of the country in 2019. And under Ramaphosa, we expect to see a more pro-business and market-friendly approach from the government and general stability.
Great. Seamus Duggan, Barney Fletcher, thank you both very much.
Well, before we wrap up, let's touch on a few more events on the risk radar over the next 2 weeks. On Monday, 25 July, the Arab League will gather in Mauritania for its 27th meeting, which has been named the Summit of Hope. Counterterrorism and the battle against IS will dominate, though the Arab League's influence on both has diminished of late amid divisions over Syria and other issues.
Mike, from the 25th to the 28th of July, the U.S. Democratic Party will gather in one of my favorite cities, Philadelphia, to nominate former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton as their candidate in the November 8th presidential election. Republicans confirm billionaire developer Donald Trump as their man on the 22nd of July. Security in Philadelphia will be very tight.
And on Sunday, 7 August, Thailand will hold a referendum on a draft constitution. The threat of political violence triggered by opposition to the draft is growing, particularly in the capital, Bangkok.
Mike, thanks. That wraps up this edition of the Risk Map podcast, produced by Control Risks, the leading international risk consultancy. Our podcast is produced every other Friday and can be found on iTunes, Podbean, or the Control Risks website, www.controlrisks.com. There, you can also hear our latest analysis on what to expect in Turkey following the failed coup attempt. For now, this is Charles Hecker in London saying thanks for listening and talk to you next time.
And high in the Rockies, out in the evergreens of Colorado, I'm Michael Moran. Thanks for listening.